It's 8:30, Thursday evening, August 23rd, 1923, and a team of federal agents, along with Buffalo Police, are positioned outside Delaware Avenue's Saturn Club, a private establishment for the city's upper crust. The agents, dubbed dry agents, are from the Bureau of Prohibition, the new law enforcement agency charged with enforcing 1920's Volstead Act. Now, rumors have existed for some time that the Saturn Club has been staging booze parties, hushed gatherings where members flout the new law. The club has even received a handful of warnings from federal agents, the last one being issued just days before the raid. But given the status and influence of its membership, most believe the organization to be beyond the reach of law enforcement. Flashing badges along with a search warrant, the agents, led by Chief Michael Stapleton, burst through the club's women's entrance. Only a small number of members are in the dining room given the late hour, but it's not people that the agents are looking for, after all. It's alcohol. Entering the club's grill, the Dry Squad, as they were known, spots an employee, James McMahon, pouring drinks from a stash behind the bar. The agents take him into custody and transport him to the Cold Spring Station, while the search presses on. It wouldn't be long before another stockpile is uncovered inside a janitor's closet beneath a stairway. The agents then head downstairs to check out the members' lockers. After prying open a handful of locker doors with a hammer and chisel, it became all too clear where the booze was hiding. Horrified at the damage being inflicted upon the club's property, Saturn officials implore Stapleton's men to stand down. "We can arrange for the keys in the morning," the staff insists, lamenting the dangling locker doors. Stapleton accepts the truce and orders an officer to stand guard throughout the night. The following morning, just before 8 a.m., federal agents returned to complete their search before club members arrived for breakfast and, as promised, employees turned over the keys to the lockers. One by one, agents opened the private storage units of some of the city's most esteemed men. Heaven only knows if they were prepared for what they were going to find. According to the Buffalo Times newspaper, the first 12 lockers yielded about 100 bottles of all kinds of liquor, ranging from the finest champagne and whiskey to the lowliest vin rouge, with gin being the most common culprit. Astonished by much of the alcohol's poor quality, Chief Stapleton quipped, "Do you fellows actually drink that stuff?" One by one, the agents pressed on down the row of lockers, searching their contents and collecting and meticulously cataloging any illegal goods inside. Carrying the contraband out in crates, baskets, and barrels, the agents loaded the bottles onto an awaiting truck. In total, the search recovered nearly 400 bottles, including 68 quarts of gin, 10 quarts of champagne, 12 quarts of vermouth, and 3 gallons of moonshine. The value of the haul was estimated to be $1,000. That's the equivalent of nearly $20,000 today. That same morning, agents also raided the Buffalo Country Club, where over $5,000 of, quote, much higher quality alcohol was seized. In the days following the raid, law enforcement waited patiently for Saturn Club management to produce the names of the locker owners while club members voiced their discontent. The agents should be out there raiding saloons where the real drinking is happening, not here in the club, they protested. Chairman of the club's house committee, George Mitchell, issued an official statement. "The liquor seized by the federal men has evidently been smuggled in by bootlegging employees of the club. The Saturn Club would not countenance the sale of liquor on its premises. Now, as for the liquor found in the lockers of its members, that is their own affair. The lockers are their private property." One man who actually shared Mitchell's sentiment was 40-year-old U.S. attorney and Buffalo native Colonel William J. Donovan, a.k.a. Wild Bill. Born in Buffalo's Irish First Ward neighborhood, Donovan had developed a name for himself as a vigorous crime fighter. The raids of the Saturn Club and Buffalo Country Club had been executed at his discretion. Like Mitchell, Donovan stated that he didn't believe the club, as a corporation, was guilty of any violation, and that he would begin proceedings against any and all individuals whose lockers were found to contain liquor. He vowed that the case of the Saturn Club and its members would be treated just as any other case of alcohol violation. And in Donovan's case, such assurances were necessary. You see, he was very much a part of Buffalo's moneyed elite. In addition to the success that he had found for himself through his law practice, Donovan had married Ruth Rumsey, daughter of Dexter Rumsey, and into one of the city's wealthiest families. In fact, the career-driven attorney was himself a member at both of the raided clubs, a fact which put him at odds with his brother members and would forever change his perception among Buffalo's upper class. On the morning of August 26th, a little more than 2 days after the raid, Saturn Club management finally turned over the much-anticipated list of locker owners to Donovan. Still, it would be days before that list was made public. The liquor locker list, as it was alliteratively known, contained 135 names and had to first be cross-referenced against evidence lists compiled by agents to ensure that no innocent members' names were published in the newspapers. On August 29th, the list was finally published in newspaper readers across the city, got their first glimpse at the names of the accused. Lockwood, Sprague, Sidway, Shalkoff, many names familiar to us today. Goodyear, Carey, Knox, Park, the list continued on and on. Within short order, the papers announced that warrants were to be issued carrying a charge for illegal possession of alcohol and up to a $500 fine. Now, for those whose names were on that list, the case was far from over. Lawyers across the city were champing at the bit to get their hands on Donovan's search warrant. And when they did, they pored over it with a fine-tooth comb looking for any way to invalidate it. They also argued that the club was, in essence, a personal dwelling, inside of which legally acquired alcohol could be consumed by family and guests with no penalty. Another defense, a rather poorly planned one, argued that the booze wasn't brought into the club, but rather it had already been there. This might have worked, except the clubhouse had been built in 1922, and the Volstead Act, well, that went into effect in 1920. Therefore, any booze present had to be brought in post-prohibition, and since transportation of alcohol was also against the law, the members would have to choose their proverbial poison. Cognizant of their faulty timeline, Donovan quipped, "I can either charge you with illegal consumption of alcohol or illegal transportation. Take your pick." Justice in the case proved slow-moving, all but dragged to a halt by resistant club members fighting the validity of the initial warrant. Still, it was more progress than had been made with the Buffalo Country Club, which had yet to even turn over their list of locker owners. Many in the public began to question whether justice would come at all. Would an elite club like the Saturn, with its well-to-do clientele, be subject to the same justice system as other bars and individuals? After all, as the Buffalo Labor Journal pointed out, quote, "In the past, several clubs of lesser importance, maybe better termed as poor man's clubs, that have been found guilty of selling liquor either had their licenses taken away as a club or were refused licenses to sell soft drinks, tobacco, etc., and therefore had to go out of business through lack of patronage." would these elite clubs, formed and fueled by the city's aristocracy, be subject to the same fate? Only time would tell. As it turns out, it wouldn't take long for this question to be answered. On September 6th, Colonel Donovan received letters from both clubs, acknowledging fault and taking responsibility for the Volstead violations. Quite an about-face from their earlier positions on the matter. The letters, signed by club presidents D.T. Dunbar and E.G. Spalding, bore a striking resemblance to one another, all except for the signatures. Both letters disclaimed any sale of alcohol, but explained that the recovered contraband had been smuggled in by either bootlegging employees or members who brought the alcohol prior to Prohibition and transported it into the club in good faith, thinking that their actions were legal. Actions against the individuals on the Saturn Club list will be discontinued, noted Assistant Federal Attorney Milton Strubble. When the dust finally settled, the Saturn Club, as well as the Country Club, landed $500 fines imposed upon them by Judge John Hazel, the same Judge Hazel who administered the oath of office to Vice President Theodore Roosevelt in September of 1901. The court gave the clubs little more than a slap on the wrist, reprimanding them for setting such poor examples for other clubs throughout the city. There was no sacredness of club membership, the club argued, that gave them immunity from the reach of the Volstead Act and its confines. But at the end of the day, it seems like maybe there was. Now, throughout the years, many people have speculated as to why another local organization, the Buffalo Club, was not part of Donovan's raid. They're quick to assume conspiracy and that it was because of some influence, some rank, or Donovan's membership at the Buffalo Club, which shielded it from the long arm of the law. However, it's important to note that while, yes, Donovan was a member of the Buffalo Club, he also held memberships to the Saturn Club and the Buffalo Country Club. As it turns out, the information that law enforcement used to gain the search warrant for the raided clubs came from bootlegging informants which specifically identified those locations. The information that had been gathered was part of a larger investigation looking into a counterfeit liquor label and prescription plot that had been operating in Buffalo. As for Donovan, he wouldn't remain in the city much longer. While his Saturn Club raid was celebrated by much of the city's working class from which Donovan had arisen, it was seen as traitorous by the upper class into which he had climbed. The year following the raid, President Warren Harding appointed him Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division and later the Antitrust Division. More and more of Donovan's time was being spent in D.C. In 1941, Donovan's former Columbia classmate, Franklin Roosevelt, appointed him Coordinator of Information, a position for which he would become the most well-known. This rather ambiguous job title would soon morph, making Donovan the Director of the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, a national intelligence office which Donovan would build from the ground up. Following the war, the OSS would be dissolved and reorganized into today's Central Intelligence Agency. But that is a story for another day. Today's episode of the Buffalo History Museum podcast was researched, written, and produced by me, Anthony Greco. Once again, please help the podcast grow by telling your friends and family about it. And if you haven't already done so, please be sure to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. The ratings and reviews help tremendously with the visibility and therefore popularity of the show. We'll be back in just a few weeks with another story, which I think you're going to enjoy. So until then, take care. The Buffalo History Museum receives operating support from Erie County, the City of Buffalo, the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Kathy Hochul and the New York State Legislature. Additional support is provided by M&T Bank and from our donors, members, and friends.